From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Burock, and this is Arizona Spotlight. The Tucson Regional Economics Opportunities Incorporated, or TRIO as it's better known around town, began operating this summer. KUAZ's Peter Michaels has a spotlight interview with the group's president and CEO. KUAZ's Nelson Wornell has a story on the world's largest newborn stem cell bank, which opened recently here in Tucson. And Bill Mortimer has a feature story on the Tucson Wildlife Center. Those stories and more are coming up, but first. Joe Snell is the president and CEO of TRIO, which serves as the lead economic development agency for the greater Tucson area and its surrounding community partners. KUAZ's Peter Michaels recently sat down with him to discuss the group's progress since its inception this past July.
Joe, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate the invitation to be here.
First of all, Joe, congratulations on the successful negotiations with Pella Corporation and bringing all these new jobs to Tucson. Are there any more opportunities like that in the near future?
Well, we sure hope so. No. I think that the timing is right for the greater Tucson region. And I think Pella is a perfect testimonial to our opportunity to grow and start to capture some jobs we haven't seen before. But the short answer is yes, we are actively working with several companies from outside the region that are looking at the opportunity of calling Tucson, greater Tucson, home. So I think we're going to see more of these in the future.
And what types of companies are we talking about, and why would they want to come to Tucson?
Well, the types of companies really runs the gamut from service companies to manufacturing companies to high-tech companies, both domestic companies and international companies. So to pinpoint that to one in particular industry segment or geographic region would be difficult, but I think part of the reason we're seeing such a broad spectrum of companies looking at the region is the Southwest is a very growing market, as you know. And I think that Tucson, in particular, offers really excellent labor force. We've got some great attributes. We have the ability to draw and recruit labor because of the quality of life issues, the climate. And I think strategic location is important for us. For example, Tucson is in a good position to service the Southern California markets companies don't have to be in Southern California to service them. And so there's a lot of advantages in our proximity to Southern California. And I think the timing's right. If we can get out and make sure we're presenting Tucson right and being very customer focused, we should pick up our share of deals.
As you said, the Southwest is a growing area. A lot of people are moving into the region. Housing prices are rising. Is Tucson still competitive in that because of the rising housing prices? And is this a good place to raise a family for a corporation thinking about coming here?
Well, I answer the latter first. It's an excellent quality of life that's offered here. And I think that everybody that, all in Tucson, outside of Tucson, recognizes that we're in a prime position to be able to draw in companies because of their ability to not only recruit but retain a workforce here. But to think we can just rely on those beautiful mountains and point out to the sunshine is probably enough. We need to be a competitive business environment, and we have to have a very competitive cost structure. From a cost of living standpoint, and specifically housing costs, what drives most of cost of living, it's a relative term. We're still affordable when you compare us to the Southern California, for example, to other areas of the country. But with that said, I do have small concern that the housing market has exploded in the last couple of years. That we could be in create a situation where we're not quite as competitive. I find it interesting that quality of life. In areas that have a high quality of life and that develop effectively, a lot of times it's because they're affordable. I think that where I came from, Denver would be a prime example. Denver boomed during the 90s because it was very affordable for the quality of life that was offered. Once the housing costs got so high, though, and they started nudging up against California, well, it wasn't quite as attractive. Mm-hmm. So I think we've got to be cautious that we don't price ourselves out of that market, but I think we're still okay.
And is Tucson seen as a city or a region that has a comprehensive vision? And do we have strong leadership? And do we have the guts, the collective guts in the city and the county to meet the challenges and to help grow this region?
One of the things I'm most excited about is I've said it many times, is I I absolutely believe the timing is right for Tucson. We have had our share of successes, but we've had a lot of failures and a lot of false starts, specifically in economic development over the last 25, 30 years. And I think just by the creation of TRIO really signals to me that this community is ready to begin to work together regionally to reduce the duplication of services, to leverage strengths. And TRIO was really grew out of a blue ribbon task force, the representatives from the private sector, the university, the city, the county, that got together and said, you know, we can do it better than we've been doing it. And the result was TRIO, where organizations were melded together. So I do think we have the political will. I think, I wasn't here years ago, but from my standpoint, the city and the county are working well together under this regional umbrella. Secondly, we do have the leadership. We just got to find a way to rally the leadership under common goals. The one thing I think we're falling a little bit short on is we don't have a blueprint for the future related to our economic growth. I think that's a challenge that we're in a position that we can overcome fairly quickly. Right now, if you ask me which industries will shape our future in the next 20 to 30 years and how we're going to get there, I'm not sure that we have a common vision throughout this region of what those industries are and how we'll get there. We are planning on launching a major comprehensive strategic planning effort that looks at identifying which industries will shape our future down the next 20 to 30 years, identifying our current strengths and weaknesses, and then develop strategies how to close that gap. I think once we do that, we'll be able to forge act as a nucleus to bring the leadership together to focus on these issues.
You've been quoted as saying you want to focus primarily on helping companies that are in Tucson, helping them expand and helping them grow. Which are those companies that you're talking about?
Well, first, you're absolutely right. TRIO is committed and really reflected in our first-year operating plan to delivering a very balanced offering of services and programs to support economic development. And just as important as Pella was to this community, it's probably more important that we help local companies expand and grow. And who are those companies? Well, that's a broad group of companies. It's the small entrepreneurial company, the small technology company, the small service company, the medium-sized company, the local big company, up to the Raytheons. So what we're really focused on is two things. One, making sure that we retain the companies we have, first and foremost. We cannot take the companies we have here for granted, because I can tell you this is a very predatory game. There are companies, economic development groups outside this community that are knocking on our company's doors all the time, trying to lure them away. So we've got to make sure that we remove the barriers to growth for our companies and focus on opportunities to help them grow. Secondly, an issue that's somewhat critical is that we've got a brain drain going on. We have got a wonderful higher education system here with the University of Arizona and Pima Community College, but candidly, we're losing a lot of our talent. They're graduating and leaving as fast as you can blink an eye.
Why is that?
Well, I'm not sure if I know why that is, but I do think our higher education institutions are one of the key elements that will help us grow and retain our companies. So we've got to find a way to slow that down and integrate our graduates into the company so that they benefit the local community and local companies first and foremost. So we're going to be into a lot of things such as the promotion of entrepreneurship, marrying venture capital with college graduates, with local company needs. I mean, I think that's where our focus needs to be. But, the best analogy I use for this is economic development's a little bit like a baseball game. When the home runs are hit, and I equate the home runs to recruiting companies, everybody sees that. It's the visibility. Everybody stands up in the stands when a home run's hit and it goes over the fence and they clap. But the reality is the game is won on base hits, and the base hits represent the local companies. So we're going to be very focused on a balanced approach to our programs. We're going to recruit companies, but we're also going to retain the ones we have.
Is CPATH a base hit or a home run?
It's both.
It's both.
It's both. CPATH is, I was just at the CPATH grand opening this Saturday, and every time I learn more about CPATH, every time I get a chance to talk to Dr. Woosley and Larry Aldrich and the folks over there, I'm convinced that, that is a key ingredient that will, create an economic juggernaut for this region. It's, We're going to do everything we can to make sure that CPATH succeeds, because I think it's an asset that ties in a lot of elements needed to grow this economy.
And is that a step toward? I mean, I hear a lot of talk about Tucson being a bioscience area. Is that a major step toward that goal?
Yes, it is. I'm not absolutely sure within bioscience where the specialty lies, but I will tell you, it more than anything, it's a first step to building a knowledge-based economy and creating the high-paying tech jobs, whether they're in bio. I think there's industries that will benefit from CPATH beyond biotech. I think industries that help support biotech, such as optics, such as software. I think it's really the tip of the spear, and we can really grow in a lot of areas from their success.
So if you had a list of challenges that you're facing, the major challenges in getting your job done, what would be the top three?
I think one of the key challenges is that we are perceived of having a crime rate that's out of control.
Property crime.
And the funny thing is headlines. People read headlines. I don't think anybody really gets the depth of stories anymore. And every time that there's a ranking that comes out, for example, that the U.S. property crime rates are down, but Tucson's are up, sure enough, I'll get a call from a friend or somebody in this industry. They'll say, ooh, you know, that's not a good trend. Nobody mm-hmm. would relocate their company or if they're a talented individual would come to a city where they thought crime was out of control. So I think we have got to either make sure that it's not a real issue, and if it is, we need to correct it. Secondly, if it's a perception issue, we've got to find ways to correct that, to defend that a little bit, and maybe get ahead of that curve so it doesn't happen. Second issue beyond crime would be the transportation issue. We've hosted a number of companies that have come in and have commented that the traffic's pretty bad here. And I can tell you my personal experience is my commute is nearly as long in Tucson as it was in Denver, and they're cities wow. that are not comparable size. We have got to get ahead of this curve and put together a transportation solution that gets corrected over years. And I think the first step is this
the RTA plan.
I think it's something that we've got to get a handle on. But we've got a few challenges. Education. I think that would be the last one I'd mention. And I will tell you with absolute certainty, my children are enrolled in school here, that they're getting a wonderful education. But I think when rankings come out that say, you know, Arizona as a whole is ranked 49th in the country in funding, what that people automatically jump to is that we have students that aren't smart, that aren't keeping pace with the rest of the country.
So the workforce is not at a level that they
exactly.
want it to be at.
So I think those are the major challenges as I see it right now that we've got to overcome.
But you've been in this industry for a while now. You mm-hmm. were in Denver before you came mm-hmm. here, and you know people around the country that mm-hmm. that are doing the same thing you are. What is the rap on Tucson? Is the rap what you just stated about the crime and the education and the transportation?
I think the rap on Tucson is it's, if you want to talk about image, Tucson, in my mind, doesn't have a bad image. It doesn't have a good image. It just lacks an image. I don't think most, from at least my world, from the business world and from companies looking to relocate, for example, they don't really know much about Tucson. Geographically, they're not sure where it's at. I think that's part of the challenge is telling the story, because I think there's one heck of a story to tell here.
And you have your job cut out for you,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Final question. 5 years from now, where would you like to see us?
Well, first and foremost, I'd like to see this community. And I mean, when I say this community, I mean everybody from Marana to Oro Valley to Benson to Sarita, but the region, the greater Tucson region, working cooperatively towards a common goal in economic development. Everybody on the same page and knowing which industries are going to shape our future, what obstacles we need to remove, and what opportunities we need to seize on. Secondly, that we've reduced significantly the duplicative services that do exist. We have got a lot of groups doing the same thing. We need to come together. And third, that we're celebrating every day the economic successes that we've had over the last 5 years. That would be my vision.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Stay tuned to Arizona Spotlight. Up next, KUAZ's Nelson Warnell reports on the world's largest newborn stem cell bank, which opened recently here in Tucson. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. A new state-of-the-art laboratory and cord blood bank is now operating in Tucson. KUAZ's Nelson Warnell was the first broadcast journalist to get an inside look.
The world's largest newborn stem cell bank opened earlier this month in Tucson. While the current uses of cord blood are limited, many experts hope that cord blood stem cells will be a non-controversial and crucial part of future treatments for diabetes, Alzheimer's, spinal cord injuries, heart failure, stroke, and many other conditions. The chief executive director of Cord Blood Registry, Tom Moore, says Tucson is an ideal location for the 80,000-square-foot complex.
It doesn't have hurricanes, it doesn't have tornadoes, it doesn't have earthquakes, and no storm surges. So it's very Mother Nature friendly, and that's important. And the other thing is that you can get into Tucson at the airport. So you can always land a plane in Tucson, most likely. Whereas back east, if you were located, you'd have snow and ice there and snow and ice from where you leave. But if you can get a plane in the air, it can land in Tucson normally.
Lab operations manager Beth Maypother oversees the storage facility.
This is the sample storage room. And these big things are called dewars. And that name comes from the Scotch, Dewar Scotch. Apparently, the Scottish man who made Dewar Scotch developed this container to carry his scotch around at the perfect temperature. So that's where the name comes from. And they are basically big stainless steel vacuum insulated thermoses is what they are. And these are what the samples are stored in. They maintain a temperature of about minus 195 degrees centigrade. Or for those of you that deal in Fahrenheit, it's about minus 385 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's very, very, very cold. We currently have over 110,000 families stored in this bank. We have 23 dewars here right now. This facility has the capacity for 675 dewars, or over 6.5 million samples to store.
The cord blood of Charlene Radke's daughter is stored at the bank.
Renee. Renee's future and hopefully her health for the future. She was born about 18 months ago, and we had heard about Cord Blood Registry and decided that that's something that we should do. Did a little bit of research, called them, talked to them. They were very professional, and we decided to go with it. Our doctor was very knowledgeable about the procedure, got the cord blood, was able to process it, got the courier there. Everything worked very smoothly, and I'm excited to be here with Blanca. And we're just happy as can be that there's going to be some sort of future solution if a problem was to occur with my daughter's health.
Some medical associations don't support the practice of cord blood storage for most people because the possible benefits are too remote to justify the cost. However, Tom Moore says CBR offers a designated transplant program for families in need.
If you look at the number of families, and we're talking up to second-degree blood relatives of that infant that's born, if there's anybody within that greater family that has a disease that has been treated with in the past, so there's a chance of relapse, or currently has a disease that's treated with stem cells, up to 80 diseases, we'll store that free for those families. So it's really important. There's a 10 to 15 minute window to collect the cord blood. So make sure those pregnant moms know about it. And they should contact Cord Blood Registry.
State Representatives David Bradley and Linda Lopez are advocates of cord blood banks and are sponsoring legislation that will facilitate counseling and education to pregnant women about stem cell storage.
The young children that you saw walk by earlier are some of the kids that have been cured of leukemia and sickle cell anemia, and they're just telling us about cerebral palsy and maybe other neurological deficits that will be overcome using stem cells from cord blood. And so there's no controversy that some of the other issues bring about. I mean, we got to get that blood in the first 10 minutes after birth, and it's just so overwhelming, the potential for this.
This is something that, you know, the cord blood generally is just discarded, generally thrown away. It's not anything that involves issues around beginning of life or anything like that, which, you know, we see so often in other stem cell issues. So this is just a fantastic opportunity to help people.
A real-life success story involves Darlene Davis, mother of Joseph, who was cured of sickle cell anemia with a cord blood transplant.
Life in the blood. And life is in the blood is when you save that cord blood and you can store it, and then you don't know who it's going to save. It can save a family member of yours. But that's why I encourage anybody and everybody to please, please get into the program, get on the internet. And it's DTP, that's the program. And get on the internet, read about it, because I advise every mother to try to be educated about this, and sisters, and, you know, just the husband. If you know about it and your wife don't know about it, or your daughter, tell them about it. That's the only way we're going to be able to spread the news.
For more information about Cord Blood Registry, and specifically the designated transplant program for families in need, you can go online to cordblood.com. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Nelson Warnell.
Up next on Arizona Spotlight, KUAZ's Bill Mortimer has a feature story on the Tucson Wildlife Center. That story when we continue with Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. A Tucson nonprofit organization is working 24 hours a day to rescue and rehabilitate owls, hawks, eagles, and javelina, just to name a few. KUAZ's Bill Mortimer reports.
With the ever-growing loss of habitat, more and more wildlife must adapt to living among humans. The odds are against them. But those who survive often do so with the help of volunteers here at the Tucson Wildlife Center. The founder of the center is Executive Director Lisa Bates. Lisa, you say you have about 50 volunteers?
We do. We're probably up to about 55, and that's how many it takes to run the place. They are the heart of the center. We could not operate at this level without them. They're all very dedicated. Do this, you know, free of charge. It's their heart's in the right place. This is what they want to do, is to help the wildlife. And they keep the place running, whether it's office work, animal work, medical, captures, education programs. We do research on our releases. We do radio tracking sometimes, and we work with the university to publish papers on the best ways to release wild animals, certain wild animals. And so there's a lot going on, and the volunteers are in every aspect and keeping those programs running.
We're joining one of those volunteers now, Ferline Hirschberger, who is taking us through the holding pens. Our first patient is a raven who, I understand, some construction workers reported it as being caught between two buildings.
The volunteers went out and found him that he was actually stuck. And according to the report, they said that he'd been there for 5 days and hadn't had anything to eat. But he hadn't supposedly had any other contact with humans, and when he heard the volunteers' voices, he came running and flapping, and so it became quite clear at that point that he has had quite a large amount of interaction in his young age with humans. And
so it could very well have been a pet of someone.
That's what we believe. We think that someone did have him as a pet illegally and saw that he was getting sick. We seem to think that it's been about actually a month that he hasn't had adequate food. And so they saw that he was getting sick and released him, hoping that we could help him. They didn't want him to die. But he's doing quite well. He is really imprinted on humans. And so unfortunately, that means that he won't be able to be released to the wild. But because he's young, he's going to make a fantastic educational bird.
Ferline, there is a bird standing at my feet, which I believe is Igor, who is a...
It's a black-headed vulture, and he's probably our most well-known and most friendly education bird here at the center. He has been with us for a couple years now, and we are really honored to have him with us. He's a lot of fun. His story is quite sad. He actually was taken out of his nest as a young vulture and was apparently being used in Santeria rituals or voodoo. And some neighbors of this in this area had noticed that he had been tied onto a back porch at the back of a shop for a while, and that he was being fed bird seed. Vultures don't eat bird seed. They're scavengers. They eat meat. And
yeah, that's not rocket science either. That's he's a vulture.
He's a vulture. And so Igor was tied by his leg to the back porch, and one by one they were cutting off of his toes to do potions, or I don't know what they were doing with his feet, but he managed to untie the rope that was around his leg, and he was able to fly to the top of a building nearby. And neighbors called the center to report that he had escaped, and Lisa was able to go out and rescue him. When she climbed up to get him on the roof, when she picked him up, his bones in his chest and his wings actually broke from the nutritional deficiencies that he was suffering. And there was a long period of time that no one knew whether or not he would make it. And lo and behold, here he is. Careful.
I just got nipped on the ankle by Igor.
He can nip pretty bad.
Thank you, Igor.
You're being naughty, Igor.
He says, well, that guy doesn't belong in here. Now, if Igor will just let go of my shoestring, we're going to sneak up on a mother bobcat over here. And she has three baby kittens. And take a look at this. Did you? I don't think that was a welcoming snarl, do you? Well, let's move on down the way here and see if we can get a look at this, what I believe is not a native bird, Fraleen.
She is really out of her territory, actually. She shouldn't be here. She's a young bird and was apparently blown off course. And she is a water bird. She wades. And so we've been feeding her smelt. We're looking right now for a center that can take her that actually focuses more on water birds, because that is not our specialty. But she's doing quite well. She started out pretty sick. She was very malnourished, and she's ready to be released as soon as we can find a place that'll take her.
With that long, skinny bill, that is an incredible creature. There are many animals here in recovery. Javelina, baby coyotes, three gray fox babies, baby raccoons, and an array of birds. The Tucson Wildlife Center is full of stories of success and tragedy. Every day presents a new challenge to these dedicated volunteers, and I applaud them all. If you see or know of an animal who you believe to be in distress, or for more information on the Tucson Wildlife Center, contact Lisa Bates at 290-WILD, 290-9453. I'm Bill Mortimer, KUAZ News.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood, with production assistance from Ginger Duran. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. I'm Julie Burock.